Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Sometimes I feel like fear is worse when you don't see it coming. When shadowy horrors masquerade as beautiful faces. Faces that beam at you so hard, you don't notice the knife in their hand before it slits your throat. Today's story is kind of like that. It's about a treasure trove of horrors in a place you wouldn't expect. The Hamptons. For those of you who don't know, the Hamptons is a slice of Long Island where the elite of New York go to summer. Homes there cost millions, and they don't even need an ocean view. Terrifying, right? No, the real horror is that this luxe lifestyle distracts us from the rot beneath it. My first run-in with this place was in the 80s. Back then, the Enclave was Manhattan's best-kept secret. Only those who could afford the Hamptons knew about the Hamptons. So if you didn't know about the Hamptons then, you probably weren't worth knowing yourself. I knew about it, but only because my literary agent made me go to some fancy industry party there. To a part of the Hamptons called Montauk. It ended up being one of those parties Grandma would have warned me about. It looked gorgeous, tasteful decor, ocean view. But there was a vibe. It was the people, social climbers with well-toned legs from all the hills they've crested. No one was giving me a second look, probably because I wore a t-shirt and swim trunks. Why I thought it'd be some adult pool party is beyond me. Anyway, I drifted to the outskirts to sip on some champagne. That's how I met Trish. She was hovering off to the side too, and she seemed jittery. I figured she was nervous with all the intimidating folks around, so I tried to put her at ease. I asked where she was from, how she knew the host. The more questions I asked, the more anxious she got, till finally, she cut me off. She said I seemed like a nice guy, so she was going to give me some advice. I should leave. See, Montauk may seem like a paradise, but some messed up stuff happened here just a few weeks ago. Something that very powerful people don't want getting out, and definitely don't want happening again. So no, she didn't know the host, because she wasn't a guest. She was a guard. You're listening to Run Fool. I'm Rodney Barnes, and this is episode 24, The Montauk Project. It took me a second to get Trish to elaborate. After admitting she was some kind of sentry, she clammed up a bit. But one thing I'm pretty good at, getting people to talk. So yeah, Trish finally spilled. She said if I walked to the end of this road, I'd see an opening in the trees with a killer view of the water. That opening used to be occupied by a mammoth estate with gray shingles and white trim. An old money vacation house owned by Montauk's most esteemed couple, the Buckwalters. About a month ago, they were having their first party of the summer season. That's where a young Wall Street hotshot named Ethan was going. And as he walked up the Buckwalters' walkway that night, oh man, was he nervous, sweating up a storm. His brand spanking new linen shirt stuck to his back, even though there was a sea breeze ripping through the yard. Why, you ask? Well, first let me tell you about Ethan. He grew up on Long Island, the other Long Island, the one with seedy strip malls instead of garden parties with endless rosé. It's a familiar story. Kid beats the odds, makes it big in finance, rags to riches. But Ethan didn't feel like he'd really made it yet. Having cash wasn't the same as being accepted into the world of the truly elite, the old money crowd. That hinged on impressing. There was a rustle in the manicured brush by the side of the house. Ethan stopped and peered at the sound. The leaves were still, but something told him to keep watching. Then that thing happened. You know, when you're staring at something in the darkness long enough, the shadows start to bend and merge and kind of become a shape. Or at least your mind convinces you they do. In Ethan's case, the shadows in the brush suddenly became a face. A morbid, nightmarish one, too, with wide eyes and gaunt cheeks. A swath of black hair pressed down against the scalp, either thinning or soaking wet, who's to say? Then just as quickly, this freaky mug shot back into the shadows, out of sight. The bushes went still, really still, like nothing had been there at all. Ethan liked that line of thinking. Nothing had been there at all. Probably just the darkness in his nerves making him see things. Once he decided that, he licked his dry lips, straightened his jacket, and strode to the entrance. A line of waitstaff flanked the foyer inside. Ethan's jacket was pried off. A canapé was pressed into one hand, a flute of champagne in the other. As he made his way further in, he passed under a crystal chandelier. It loomed over the foyer. As for the rest of the house, actually, do I need to describe it? Think Great Gatsby in the 80s and you got it. Gaudy, expensive, and full of Manhattan's most powerful couples. They milled about the space, ethereal and serene, dressed to the nines. Although even the wealthy weren't immune to 80s fashion trends, there were plenty of shoulder pads, sequins, and big, big hair. Ethan basically salivated at the sight of them. This was the crowd he was dying to be a part of. The person Ethan wanted to impress was the owner of this gorgeous abode, Ricky. He first met Ricky at the Montauk Club during a round of golf. Ethan was awful at golf, by the way, but that's another story. Point is, Ricky was a Buckwalter, one of the great American families. He had gobs of money, some great job at the Defense Department, and everyone just liked him. I mean, Ricky was the reigning king of Manhattan's royalty. There he was, in a living room off the foyer, standing in an all-white suit, surrounded by his subjects, all of whom applauded as Ricky bellowed, "Let's get this party started!" Ethan hesitated, because this is embarrassing. He wasn't technically invited to this thing. He'd heard about it at the club and decided he needed to put himself out there. See, he had a plan. Get close to Ricky, impress him, then be accepted into the ultimate inner circle. That wasn't going to happen if Ethan didn't even say hello. So he headed over to Ricky. But before he could get there, Ricky's wife, Uma, swooped in. Her aquanet helmet of curls quivered as she yanked her husband to the side. They stayed close enough that Ethan could hear their conversation. Something about how his office had called four times. Hadn't he told them he was busy? Ricky smiled, said it was nothing. But he was clearly bothered because he dashed out the room after that. Ethan swore under his breath. He'd have to corner Ricky later. He looked around for someone to chat with, but the other guest's gazes slid over him like he was invisible. Not someone they cared to meet or know. He suddenly felt very not invited. Then he realized the guest's attention had turned to the entrance. A man wearing dirty gray sweats wandered in. His face. Ethan shivered. This guy looked a lot like the face he saw in the bushes outside. Gaunt, hair plastered to his head. By the way, I don't know this man's name. Trish didn't say. So let's call him the outsider. Because he sure as hell didn't belong here. He looked even more not invited than Ethan. The outsider didn't reach for canapes or champagne. He wandered into the foyer like he was in a dream. The chatter of the party turned to a murmur as he walked further into the home. The outsider stopped in the living room and looked around. His gaze raked over the other guests. like he was searching for something. And everyone found out what that was when he croaked out,
"Where's Dr. Smith?"
That's when Uma flew in for some damage control. Her tone was polite but firm as she informed the outsider that this was a private party. He needed to leave. Ethan flinched. This was so embarrassing. Was he going to get kicked out next? But the outsider didn't seem bothered. He asked again where Dr. Smith was.
"Where is he?"
Uma grabbed his elbow and pulled him towards the exit. That's when the man lost it. He ripped his arm from Uma and backed away, trembling. His mouth quivered. His eyes leaked fear. He opened his mouth and screamed. The wail cut through Ethan's head like a knife. He yelped and covered his ears with his palms. The other guests did too. So did Uma. But she looked wrong. Her head shook back and forth. It picked up speed until her features became a blur. Ethan could hear her choking too. Loud, hacking gasps as her throat struggled to keep up with the unnatural movement. Her trembling hands moved to her cheeks, a futile attempt to stop whatever was happening. Then, a loud crack echoed through the room. And with that, Uma's head twisted all the way around on her neck. Let me tell you, not many can say they've seen another person's head turn a full 180 degrees. In fact, for a moment, Ethan didn't understand what had happened. He didn't have the context for why he could suddenly see the back of Uma's head, even though her chest and shoulders hadn't moved one bit. At least, all that didn't register till Uma collapsed to the ground and blood pooled around her. That's when Ethan realized her spinal cord had burst through her skin. Everyone else must have realized that too, because that's when the screaming started. Chaos took over fast. Some guests and waitstaff stared at her crumpled form, totally stunned. Some shrieked and ran to Uma. Others stumbled around looking for a way to help. In the hubbub, Ethan saw the outsider sprint down a hall next to the kitchen. Ethan was working overtime to figure out what just happened. Uma was dead, her neck twisted around. And even though it seemed impossible, Ethan knew that guy hadn't touched her. Had the man killed Uma just by looking at her? A loud gasp pulled Ethan's attention. Ricky. He'd stepped back into the room and into a nightmare. His eyes pinged from his shell-shocked guests to the horrified waitstaff. Then, to his broken wife. With a wail, he ran over to kneel beside her. Ethan glanced at the hallway again, where the outsider fled. He was doing some math. So a creepy guy killed Ricky's wife without laying a finger on her. Ethan could find that guy and force him to confess how he did it. Then Ricky would be forever indebted to Ethan. And then Ethan would be a hero to everyone in Montauk. Look, it's not the most sensitive line of thinking, but nothing was going to bring Uma back. Ethan might as well use the moment to his advantage. He headed for the hallway. The pendant lights on the corridor ceiling were shockingly bright. Their glare illuminated the hall's neon floral wallpaper. Uma had gotten a little funky with the decor here. Up ahead, a door was ajar. Ethan walked towards it. It was the Buckwalter's bedroom, and it was incredible. A circular waterbed, black and gold carpet as far as the eye could see, ceramic deco light fixtures on every surface. There was no door to the bathroom, just a curved entry, which revealed a gold-tiled toilet and the outsider's reflection in the mirror. Ethan's stomach flipped at the sight of him. For a moment, the two stared at one another, just like they did earlier in the night. Except this time, Ethan had a closer view of the guy. The outsider was in bad shape. There were burns on his temples, two circular marks. The corners of his mouth were raw and flaking, and there was another burn across his throat. Whatever he'd been through, it hadn't been pretty. The outsider stepped closer. His eyes pleaded with Ethan. So did his voice as he asked,
"Where is he?"
And in a stronger tenor,
"Where's Dr. Smith?"
Ethan didn't know what he was going on about, but he knew he had to be gentle here. He spoke real soft and real slow. "Hey, man, just come to the living room. We'll figure this out." Ethan was lying. Of course he was. He was itching to offer this man up as a sacrificial lamb for his social status. The outsider knew something was up. His eyes went cold and his whole body tensed. At the same time, Ethan felt his throat close, like some invisible fist had grabbed his larynx. He gasped, but he couldn't draw any air. The only thing that entered him was panic. The outsider hadn't moved. His hands weren't anywhere near Ethan. And yet, he was strangling him. Ethan sank to his knees. His vision swam. But just before he passed out, the outsider relaxed. Ethan felt his neck release. He fell forward, wheezing. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the man hurry out of the room. Now, our guy would have been smart to run here, that whole run fool thing. However crazy it sounded, he was sure the outsider was some kind of telepathic killer. But he didn't run. It's wild, but Ethan found himself following him. The outsider had already made it back to the living room by the time Ethan caught up. He was stalking around, demanding to know where Dr. Smith was. Ethan checked out the others' reactions. No one seemed to know who this guy was talking about. He looked around for Ricky, but their host was nowhere to be seen. Probably calling for help, Ethan reasoned. He guessed the police would be there soon. He focused back on the outsider. The guy didn't look good. Sweat glistened on his forehead. He chewed his lip pretty hard, drawing blood. A tongue lashed out every now and then, wiping the crimson away. This was the face of a dangerous man. Ethan felt cold. He didn't know what ungodly force had just made him follow this guy. But the same instinct was now giving him different instructions. An order that everyone in this house should follow. He shouted then, telling the room full of aristocrats to run. To his surprise, they listened, almost like they just needed to be told what to do. There was a stampede to the exit. At the same time, a series of deafening bangs rose around them. It was the doors, the windows, any kind of exit, all slamming shut on their own. Well, not on their own. It was the outsider. He sank to his knees, twitching with rage. His voice went shrill as he screamed that no one was leaving. Not until he saw the doctor.
Where's Dr. Smith?
His eyes rolled back into his head then, so that only the whites were visible. A throbbing vein pulsed on his neck. A string of drool crawled down his chin. Ethan had a feeling that what happened next was not going to be pretty. Only a second later, something dripped onto his upper lip. He touched a finger to the spot. Blood. His nose was bleeding. Then, a searing, abrupt pain shot through his head. The guests and waitstaff stood around the room, frozen, watching the outsider with fascination. All their noses were bleeding. Their ears were, too, and their eyes. Ethan knew he looked just like them, bleeding from whatever orifice blood could come out of. And he didn't know if it would help or not, but he knew he had to do something. So he dove into the closest haven he could find, a small closet just behind a white modular love seat. He slammed the door shut. Screams filled the air. Blood-curdling, life-ending screams. Then there was a brutally loud pop. Then another. Ethan shrieked as his head pounded. His eyes bulged. Another pop echoed through the cavernous living room. Pop. 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 It went on for what felt like an eternity. And then, it was quiet. Ethan gasped as the iron grip on his head relaxed. He sort of collapsed, his body quivering from the intense agony he had just been in. He lay there on the floor, surrounded by Ricky's golf clubs and some board games. He didn't want to open the door, because he knew something wretched lay waiting on the other side. Even so, Ethan stood on trembling legs, wiped the blood from his eyes, slicked back his sweat-soaked hair, and opened the door. It was complete and utter carnage. Blood soaked the white furniture, so vivid it looked like paint splatter. And the source of the blood? Bodies lay strewn about the room. They looked off, though. It took Ethan a moment to realize they were missing their heads. Yeah, that sound you heard? That was a bunch of noggins being popped like bottles of Cristal. The lights flickered off, then on again, then off, on. Each burst of brightness illuminated the butchery in the room. Manhattan's elite. Strewn about a blood-soaked living room like beheaded Barbies. Ethan had enough. He shot towards the door, praying it would open. A pained yelp stopped him in his tracks. It came from upstairs. Ethan froze. Was it the outsider or survivor? Then it occurred to him. Ricky hadn't been in the room when heads started popping. If that sound was Ricky, Ethan didn't want to just leave him to rot. And it didn't make the most sense, but he still wanted to win Ricky over, even now. Ethan looked around for a weapon, anything. He glanced over his shoulder at the closet, zeroing in on Ricky's golf clubs. He grabbed a driver, which was cute. This outsider exploded the heads of an entire guest list and catering staff, all without lifting a finger. A golf club wasn't going to do much. Another yelp came from upstairs. Ethan crept up the stairwell. His steps were quiet thanks to the shag carpet. When he reached the landing, the lights flickered again. This time, they turned off completely. Ethan, heart pounding, gripped the club. He stepped towards a door to his right. He'd have to check each room, see if Ricky was hiding or hurt. The room was almost pitch black, but the moonlight filtered in from an open window, so Ethan could make out shapes here and there. Another flicker of power hit, and the room burst into view. Yeah, empty. The lights flickered off again. Ethan turned to go just as another flicker hit the room. The light and Ethan's movement meant that when he turned, he could see what was behind him. A wide-eyed, terrified face. A sweaty hand shot over Ethan's mouth before he could scream. It was Ricky. "Shh," Ricky said. "He's still here." Ethan was scared. Sure he was. He was also excited, though. Here he was with Ricky freaking Buckwalter, and they were about to escape a madman together. They'd be bonded for life. Ricky's legs suddenly shot out from under him. His torso hit the ground and he was dragged out of the room, feet first. Ethan gasped and tore into the hall after him. Ricky was being yanked down the dark corridor by an unseen force. His body smacked against the walls as he went. Then he whipped around a corner and out of sight. Ethan raced down the hall. When he flew around that same corner, what he saw there was bad news indeed. Ricky floated above the foyer, suspended in midair right under that enormous chandelier. He contorted violently, like someone was shaking him as hard as they could. His limbs twitched, his cheek fat quivered, his eyes bugged. His face turned bright red, then blue. In the center of the foyer below was the outsider. He glared at Ricky so hard he turned purple. Tears streamed down his cheeks. He opened his mouth and bellowed a single heart-wrenching plea. "Fix me." The house shook around them. Dust fell from the eaves. The windows shattered. A loud bang came from the other end of the house, like something big had caved in. The outsider was going to kill them all, and there was nothing Ethan could do about it. Or, that wasn't entirely true. He looked down, realizing his sweaty hands still clutched the driver. Without stopping to think, he chucked it at the outsider. Ethan didn't have high hopes for this Hail Mary. Remember, he was pretty crap at all things golf. But sometimes life rewards a big swing. The driver flew through the air and nailed the outsider in the head with a sickening crack. The guy dropped like lead. Ricky did too. His body plunged to the foyer below, just as the house collapsed around them. Ethan had no idea how much time had passed when he came to. His eyes were caked shut with debris, but he managed to peel them open and look around. He was in the Buckwalters' yard, surrounded by the carcass of their beautiful home. A thick plank lay over his legs, pinning him to the manicured grass. A few feet away was the outsider. His mouth hung open in a final scream. A beam protruded from his chest. Ethan tried to move but couldn't. Maybe he was paralyzed. Maybe dying. Darkness was closing in on him again. But before he passed out, he saw a van pull up. A handful of men in white spilled out and rushed to him. EMTs. Help had arrived. The thought relaxed him, and he let the darkness come. The next time Ethan woke, he was staring up at a bright fluorescent light. He still couldn't move his legs, not because of debris, though. Now he was strapped to a gurney. He could see he'd been dressed in a gray sweatsuit. The hoodie unzipped so his chest was exposed, revealing plenty of bumps and bruises, but also a network of wires pasted to his sternum and belly. That's about all he could see, because there was some kind of helmet on his head, holding his neck still. That's when a figure moved out of the shadows to peer at Ethan from above. It was Ricky. He had a gash on his cheek, a black eye, but his hair was washed and combed, slicked back, and he had that same at-ease swagger that Ethan admired. a voice called out from somewhere in the room Ethan couldn't see. "Are you ready, Dr. Smith?" Ricky replied, "Yes, we're about to begin." Ethan flinched. Ricky was Dr. Smith. Ricky was the person the outsider was looking for. He tried to ask the obvious, why? But there was some kind of mouth guard in his mouth. He couldn't speak. It didn't matter anyway because Ricky started talking. "You guys, this was a true villain speech, and those are always pretty boring, so I'll sum it up here. See, Ricky didn't just work for the Defense Department. He was in charge of developing defense. In particular, he created something called the Montauk Project, based right there in sunny old Montauk. The project did a lot of heady scientific things, but their main task, Ricky and his team were trying to give people telekinesis and some other sci-fi stuff. If they were successful, America would lead the world in psychological warfare. The outsider was a test subject. It was bad, bad luck that he'd escaped. And now they needed someone to take his place. Ethan sputtered, saying all kinds of things. They'd never get away with it. A house blew up on Montauk. Important people were dead. Ricky shrugged. "Gas explosion," he said. "Tragic." Then Ricky pulled a lever by the gurney and cried, "Let's get this party started." A massive amount of electricity shot through Ethan's body. His organs constricted, his throat choked, his teeth clattered. None of that was as painful as his regret, though, because he'd asked for Ricky's glorified attention, and now he'd gotten it. When someone tells me a story, they usually seem relieved after. Like by listening, I'd been able to relieve a large burden they'd been carrying around. But not Trish. She started her tale nervous, and now she was in a full-blown panic. She muttered that she shouldn't have told me all that. Her eyes drifted to the window. What she saw there made her face pale. "Leave," she said, "now." I followed her gaze and saw a nondescript black car in the drive outside, tinted windows. I couldn't see who was in there, but something told me I didn't want to know. I left right after that. I was done mingling with these fancy snobs, because if Ethan's story taught me anything, it was what I already knew. All that glitters is not gold. Run Fool is a production of Ballin Studios, Campside Media, and Atwell Media. It is hosted and executive produced by me, Rodney Barnes. This episode was written by Kate Murdoch and produced by Abakar Adan and Lee Mengistu. Sound director, designer, and mixer is Kevin Seaman. Creature vocalization by Terry Cashburn and artwork by Jessica Clarkston Kiner. Production support by Jeremy Bone and Cole Lacasio. Special thanks to our operations team, Doug Slaywin, Ashley Warren, Sabina Mara, and Destiny Dingle. Executive producers at Ballin Studios are Mr. Ballin, Nick Witters, and Zach Levitt. Executive producers at Will Media are Will Malnati and Rosie Guerin. Executive producers at Campside Media are Matt Scher, Josh Dean, Vanessa Gregoriadis, and Adam Hoff. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.